You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo. Liverpool are top of the league. I'm Joe Rimmer and I'm joined today by Ian Doyle. How are we, Ian?
Okay, if Liverpool weren't top of the league, would you still be Joe Rimmer?
I'd still be Joe Rimmer, yeah. I don't know whether you'd be joining me. Maybe we'd ask someone else.
Well, you can do if you want.
You just stayed at home.
Yeah, that would be even better.
There you go. And that was Theo Squires. How are you, Theo?
Yeah, not too bad. We're top of the league.
Liverpool are top of the league, and we are audio only today. It's bank holiday, and our producer Ian is off. It's got nothing to do with Everton's accounts or the fact that they've just gone their 12th game without a win. Yes, so lots to discuss for us. Yeah, as I said, Liverpool top of the league, Manchester City and Arsenal drawing yesterday to ensure Liverpool stayed top after they beat Brighton. We'll talk managers. We'll look ahead to Sheffield United. Before we crack on, a shout out to our new sponsors, NordVPN, who came to your rescue the weekend,
yeah,
Theo.
I did. I got home after the Liverpool game and looking around at the results reminded myself that Everton had lost and thrown it away in spectacular fashion. So I wanted to see this Seamus Coleman own goal to see how comical it was. But Twitter blocked me geographically, so I had to go to VPN to find
VPN
it.
VPN on.
Yeah, to put the US on so I could find, I think it was CBS's tweet of the goal.
Yeah, that's it. NordVPN can do that, and they can also protect you when you're out on the road with your VPN on. They can protect you from anyone trying to steal your bank details.
Even Ian Doyle.
They can't protect you from Ian Doyle. No one can protect you from Ian Doyle. But Nord can do plenty besides. Right.
That wouldn't be a very good, you know, can do everything but protect.
But protect you from Ian Doyle. Yeah, I thought we came up with their tagline the other day, but
which we've already forgotten it, haven't we?
Yeah, forgotten.
On board with Nord.
On board with
Nord.
That was
it. Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Right. Anyway, let's crack on. Liverpool 2, Brighton 1. 6 minutes at the end there, Doyley. That Liverpool were determined to sort of give us all a heart attack. They decided that they did not want to keep the ball one bit and kept giving it back to Brighton. But they got through. They got the 3 points. And at this stage of the season, they're all incredibly important. But how incredibly important was that?
The problem they've got is that the person who they'd always bring on for this kind of thing has left and was in fact sat in the opposition dugout, James Milner, who you'd kind of bring him on and he'd just go and run into the corner, fall over, win a succession of free kicks and the game would be over. And Liverpool just haven't got that at the moment. Well, certainly, I think Endo's too setting his position. You know, he's not going to go wandering off.
Yeah.
But I think one or two of the others should. You know, a bit more game management required. And I think they'll pick up on that during the closing weeks of the season, just in terms of the game itself. I mean, it wasn't a very good start, was it? I mean, it was very much what we feared, that Brighton would turn into Brazil 1970 or Barcelona 2011 or whichever good team you want to talk about. And they did for about 15 minutes. But then after that, you look at it just as a whole, in the context of the results and the way the game went, Liverpool could have won about 4 or 5-1, and nobody could have complained too much. They had that many chances. I just think they just made it a little, as you say, just a little bit difficult for themselves in the end by not finishing the game off. And while in other games that's been a criticism, I think against Brighton, the way that Liverpool have played against them and the results that they've had over the last couple of years, just to beat them was good enough. And they've managed to sidestep another, I wouldn't say banana skin as such, although brings to mind, I actually did write that. So it's a little, not quite a brown skin. I think Sheffield United will be. But it's, you know, it's a good result because you look at how, I think City beat them 2-1, didn't they? Early this season. Arsenal played them at home, I don't think they have they? I can't remember, to be honest.
They must have done because Arsenal are away
at
Brighton
next
weekend.
I don't know what score it was. Arsenal probably won, didn't they? probably about
I can't remember. You're looking at me, I'm not going to be able to remember.
Yeah. So if it was that long ago. But the point being is that Brighton have obviously been a bit like kryptonite for Klopp. And and his last game against them, he's managed to get the win and get one over Roberto De Zerbi.
Yeah, in boxing, they say styles make fights. And I always think it's a similar situation in football. And this Brighton seem to be one of those teams who seem to counter Liverpool quite well and seem to be able to pick Liverpool off, I think, when they push forward. So I always thought that yesterday's game there was going to be tricky. They were going to give Liverpool a scare. You know, I think when we did our predictions before, and I remember saying that I think Brighton will score. I didn't think they'd score that quickly. they did. But, Liverpool had to show a lot of mental character, and they did that, didn't they, and got through.
Yeah, they did. Like, it's a nightmare start, but we've said that a lot about Liverpool recently, and they always seem to find a way to grind it out. I think they've only not fallen behind twice at Anfield in 2024 in the league this year, and both times that's when you've had Jota fit. Jota's the one who's got the goal. So you're lacking a little something in the squad there. Like, they're not really patient offensively. We've said that a few times, and they're not taking their chances. They're rushing things, but they've still got that fighting spirit that they don't let the heads drop. It's not like the Manchester United game where they were really, really panicking and you thought, not going to score here. Ever since then, they've seemed to get a bit more nouse about what they need to do to get the job done. When you've got a player like Alexis McAllister on the ball as well, who can pick out the tiniest gap, still get the ball through it and set up a goal. It was a really smart performance from in the end, apart from the fact that they didn't just take it to the corner for those final 5-10 minutes. Like we saw, I think Raya got booked for time wasting with 15 minutes left when Arsenal were clinging on to a 0-0 draw. It's like, you got 2-1 up against a team you struggle to beat most seasons at the moment. Just take it to the corner, time waste. It's probably why Gravenberch was brought on, but Liverpool didn't do that. But there was more belief in them than we've seen against before.
Gravenberch, the way he's been playing, is the last person in the world to try to keep up with the ball. He lost it.
When Gomez put that cross in, and I think he started shouting at Gakpo, maybe. I don't know whether I think he thought that Gakpo was going to come and receive it because it was a low cross. But when he put that cross in, I was like, oh my God, do they seriously want to throw this away? And obviously Lallana had that chance. Was that not in the, you thought that was earlier
I
on?
I thought that was earlier on.
He only came on in the 83rd minute, didn't he?
I felt like it was really late on and he sort of
scuffed it. Don't forget that Salah, Liverpool, if Salah scores that chance and keeps us like a great save, then their approach is just
was that the counter-attack one?
Yeah, their approach was completely just
Salah should have played it back to
Diaz. I take that, but they are very... Liverpool have one way of playing, don't they, which is like a million miles per hour, which is, it's great to watch, it gets them results, it's
do you really think
admirable.
That? I don't necessarily think that's the way that they play. Sorry to be contrary. They don't necessarily play a million miles an hour, no. I think
it's full throttle.
I don't even think it's that. It hasn't been that for ages.
I think it is that again. See, I think this season, that's how they found success again.
I think it's that in moments, but you can't
get that going. Yesterday it was like that. From about the 20th minute, I thought Liverpool just upped and upped and upped and upped and upped the pressure.
I don't think it
and even when they got the second goal, they didn't seem to sort of like, you didn't see them fall back and start, they didn't let Brighton into the game. They kept the pressure on them, kept playing at them and kept creating chances. And they're like,
that
weirdly
doesn't
enough,
necessarily mean it has to be 100 miles an hour.
No, but it did feel like it. And I think...
I can see the point in sense of Bradley still getting forward, isn't he? The midfielders are still attacking. It's not as though you're going, right, you two, stay back now. Let's have a bit more control on
it. They continue to play that way. And, obviously, they were looking for a third that would have killed it off. But even in the last 5 minutes, they still commit players forward. They still look to create chances. They still look to score goals. They're like... Funny enough, we were talking about Man United, weren't we, before, about how every game they seem to just ride their luck and teams seem to have a million shots and United seem to snatch goals. Liverpool are the opposite. They seem to have like a million shots and usually they make the breakthrough. But yeah, they never stop. They're always going close. They're always forcing saves out the keeper or that offside from Diaz. It's admirable. It doesn't mean at times it makes you a bit nervous, but... But you can't knock it because it's got them to where they are. And I think this season, I think they have got a bit more full throttle. I think when they won the title under Klopp, they slowed down and they became a bit more of a controlling team. And I think they've sped up again this season to almost rediscover themselves after having a poor season last year.
I think when Curtis Jones plays, it's a bit different. Because he can.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So he keeps hold of the ball and Harvey Elliott keeps hold of the ball. Yeah, and I think it slows down in a good way then. Because then not everything is just, oh, we got to go forward and everything. And I think you might see a bit more of Curtis and Elliot, certainly in those key moments. And I think when Curtis comes back, which could be Thursday, and I'll get onto that in a bit, he'll certainly be playing a lot of minutes for that reason.
Yeah, well, if you look at players, I love Luis Diaz, and I thought, I said to you before, I thought you were slightly harsh giving him a 7. I probably would have bumped him to an 8 yesterday. I thought he was just relentless, but you know, he picks up the ball and he runs with it, doesn't he? And he never stops the attacking runs, does he? So I thought he was relentless and he really pinned Brighton back. We'll talk about him in a bit, though. Let's talk about Alexis McAllister, who was the standout player yesterday. I thought you did the national media roundup. Chris Bascom compared him to Alonso. I think he's a slightly different player to Alonso because this Liverpool team plays in a lot more pace, a lot more action. And he manages to do the great graceful things that Alonso did, but just, I think, at a different speed.
Well, I mean, yes. But I think he's a different kind of player, full stop.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
I can understand where Basco's coming from with that. But I do think he's a different kind of player. And I think that he's shown that because he can play in two positions. Admittedly, he's a lot better in an advanced role than he was playing defensive midfield. But by the end, he was actually quite a decent defensive midfield. I mean, look at his performance at Man City. We've mentioned it before in that 1-1 draw. That's probably the first game where you thought, hang on, he could do this. And obviously, within about 2 weeks, Endo was in and he was out because he was injured. So that was that. But the last few weeks, you know, I think it's 9 goal contributions in the last 9 games. It's 4 goals and 5
you make it
assists.
10-10 if you include Argentina on starts.
Well, there you go. So he's he is somebody who is in form. And Jurgen Klopp got asked about it on Friday. We mentioned this. We didn't mention it actually because we did the podcast before the press conference. But he said he's the player that Liverpool he had hoped for, and he's kind of the player Liverpool had signed. And you could argue, looking at it in retrospect now, that he was able to play as a defensive midfielder for as long as he did. That was a bonus for Liverpool because, you know, it gave Endo the chance to acclimatise. We've seen that he's been good and since he's got back into the team in December. And overall, I think if Liverpool are going to do anything this for the remainder of the season, it's going to be McAllister who's going to be pulling the strings. And just have to hope that now that I'm going to say this, he's going to instantly get injured. He has to avoid injuries. Sorry, everybody, if he gets injured next game.
He's got the traits of so many good players, doesn't he? Like, I can see the Alonso comparison in terms of how he passes the ball, how he has control in midfield. Yeah. But he's more offensive than Alonso. He likes to get forward. He's got more of a
covers the pitch more, doesn't
he? Covers more ground without being necessarily quick. But then he's also got that Wijnaldum ability of sticking his backside out and not losing it. He's just amazing at retaining possession and carrying it forward. Like, there was one yesterday around the halfway line where the ball's bouncing up and down. He's got 2 or 3 Brighton players trying to shrug him off it, and he still managed to carry it out, get through and lead an attack. Yeah. He's just such a good player, and we knew he was going to be a talent. He's won the World Cup for a reason, but it's only now when he's been unleashed in his favoured role, you're realising just how good he is, and he's getting better and better with each week at the moment.
But that's what the most impressive thing is. It's how he becomes more and more influential, doesn't he? And you think about it this season, when Liverpool signed Szoboszlai, for the first few weeks of the season, we absolutely raved about him. You know, I still think he deserves credit. I don't think he was absolutely at his best yesterday, but he grew into the game and was influential later on in the game. Endo was, you know, I said before, he's the best player of all time. But I know, in all seriousness, really loved Endo's influence, but obviously a slower start. Whereas McAllister has consistently been very good throughout the season, but is growing now in influence. And you can see Liverpool's players trusting him a bit more and giving him the ball a bit more. And he's becoming the fulcrum of the team, isn't he? More, I think, really, just really impressive. Like, I remember that moment with when he had players around him and the way he can find ways out of like quite tight situations is really impressive. And yeah, he covers the pitch so well, considering he's not the quickest, he's not the strongest, but he seems to have that game intelligence to put himself in the right areas. So,
I reckon he'd be really, a very really good manager in 10, 15 years' time. He seems that sort.
Maybe. I don't write the story already.
But you know, no, he's. You can see how this team has grown together over the course of the season, and he's probably the best example of that, of someone who's become more influential because the other players have got to know him. He's got to know the other players. And having played in a couple of different positions out of necessity at times, it's probably aided him, but it also has meant that he's now settled into what is his true position.
I think it was Curtis Jones that mentioned his backside earlier this season. Was it? That Theo's just mentioned there. She said he can do unbelievable things with it.
Yeah. can do unbelievable things with his bum.
Yeah.
Luis Diaz can do unbelievable things with his feet. Took his equaliser really well. Is there a more persistent player in the Liverpool squad than Luis Diaz?
I mean,
they're all pretty persistent.
Yeah, they're all persistent. Endo probably is one, but in terms of his actual just, you know, continually pressing, he's got to be up there, hasn't he?
His fitness is out of this world.
The reason why they signed him, his ability to press, because that's why he was able to slot straight in when he first joined, what was it, two and a bit years ago now. So, yeah, and he's somebody who, again, you go since the turn of the year, there's him, there's Nunes, there's McAllister, there's when he came back, Endo. And then you're looking at the youngsters who've stepped in. Quants, I'm sure we'll get onto him in a bit. Bradley, Kelleher when he's come in. All these players have just like, they've elevated themselves and with them the team. And not all of them you'd have expected to be like that. But obviously Diaz, we already knew he was a great player. And he had the injury problems too. But same injury twice, wasn't it, last season. And when you think about it, there's still players like Trent and Jota.
Yeah.
And I'm sure someone, I've mentioned Jones, Robertson. I know we missed only a game. Have we missed somebody else here?
I feel like you've missed someone out.
Yeah, we've missed someone, haven't we?
Obviously, we're not talking about Thiago because he's not played all the season, Thiago. Yeah, sorry.
There's bound to be somebody we've forgotten.
Yeah. There's that been that many injuries. Not as many as Newcastle, though, don't you?
Allison, there you go, yeah.
Yeah.
Did Diaz get booked in the end yesterday? Because that was that one where he was pressing the defender on the left wing and then just ran all the way across the right wing following the ball. And I think he eventually conceded a foul because the ref was that dodgy in the first place.
I couldn't tell what half the bookings were for, what half the free kicks were for. There was one in the second half where I think a Brighton player got booked.
Danny Welbeck got booked because a Brighton player got fouled. Yeah, and the free kick was given. Yeah, and I think it was, given, I think he was complaining booking about, was it McAllister who made the foul or... There was a little bit where they wanted to get McAllister sent off. I know that. Mm. I think it was Veltman, was it? Who was persistently giving it the old yellow card nonsense, and he never got one.
Remember the days when that was supposed to be yellow card.
McAllister getting in the first day game in the first of the season against Chelsea. I haven't seen anyone else get that. There's bound to be somebody who's got it, but I personally haven't seen it.
Do you remember the first day of the season when Trent got booked for time wasting when he was just taking a throw in the first half?
Yeah.
And then that was like, right, we're cracking down on
but
that.
What has crept back, though, crazy, is the, not so much in the game yesterday, but some of the other games, the massive amounts of injury time has come back. It's like they got a directive in the last international break to say, come on, we need to get these additional minutes back up there. And we saw a lot of that over the weekend. Not necessarily Liverpool, though.
Just going back to Diaz, Theo, I remember earlier in the season, remember the Newcastle game being sat really low down, and like the 12th row or something like that, and being right in front of Salah in the second half, and he was up against Dan Byrne. Dan Byrne would have played left back, was that right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. And Salah ran him ragged. And it was incredible to see Salah that close and just see just like his fitness, his pace, his strength, and just the sheer persistence that, like, it made you think, imagine playing up against this guy who just never gives you a minute, you know, his chases after every ball, dribbles with it, runs at you. And you don't watch Salah from higher up and think necessarily I don't necessarily think he goes past players that easily. You know, I think he sort of, you know, he wants to get it on his left foot. But the fact that he kept doing it to Dan Byrne and eventually wore him down, eventually found success. And I find Diaz like that on the other side. You know, that yesterday he picks the ball up and he just goes at them and goes at them and goes at them. And he does it that many times that eventually they just fold and things happen. And yeah, I think you can see why he doesn't come off a lot and why he always plays when he's fit, because he just... He just gives Liverpool great balance and he's so persistent and wears teams down, doesn't he?
Yeah, I remember one moment in a press conference earlier in the season when there were more Colombian journalists coming to the games, obviously with what was happening with Diaz off the pitch.
Yeah.
And they were asking how he was because he hadn't played in whatever game it was. And Klopp was like bemused at it, going, well, he starts every game for a reason. And you hadn't necessarily seen it on the pitch as much because of the off-field stuff and the injuries. But now he's got that run there. You're reminded of how good he was when he first came into the side and why he's got that status in the team. Like, it's easy to say you could put a Gakpo there or a Nunes because with a run of games, they score more goals. But Diaz just fits so well with the style of play, doesn't he? And like you said, the way he torments defenders and he never gives up. He's got a bit of a trickery in his book as well, how he can get past them. He's just relentless and he creates chances. You would like to see him score a few more. He's not quite reached those Mane levels yet, but he's still just such an effective player. And when Liverpool when they're going full throttle, when they are going on the counter-attack, his pace is key to that as well. It's because he's certainly looking at him, he seems quicker than a Salah. It's only Nunes when he's properly galloping, you think, oh, he's quicker than him. But yeah, he definitely deserves that place at the moment. And it's why Klopp loves him so much. It'll be interesting to see what happens with him with the new manager, because he's in that age group where he's stuck between, isn't he? He's not that younger one who's going to get better necessarily. This is coming into his peak years. Is it you sell him now for a profit in a year or two, or do you keep him and he's going to be first choice for years to come? If Klopp was staying, you'd imagine, yes, he is definitely part of that. With the new manager, there's still that conversation. But in the current form, he's got to be part of the attack. He's got to be first choice. But then we'll be saying this when Jota comes back and he scores 6 goals in the running and keeps Liverpool right at the top of the table, or Gakpo recovers form. That's why they're so good at the moment, because they've got such strength and depth that you can stake a claim for all of them. And we're going to have the exact same conversations in midfield when Jones is back, because at the moment you're saying the three is Szoboszlai, McAllister, Endo. But if Jones is back in and he's on form, does he not deserve a place? And then Trent, who's right back? So many positions you can have that debate over.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
But it's all about balance, isn't it? I think the thing about Diaz in the attack, and the reason why I think he always stays in, and him and Salah kind of stay put, don't they? And they move around. You know, Nunes is, I don't think he's ever completely guaranteed a place, especially when Jota's fifth. But I just think, yeah, he doesn't score as much, and he probably doesn't even assist as much as perhaps he should. But his relentlessness and his ability to be a bit of a magnet for the ball, I think, just creates opportunities, spaces for others. And actually, I think it allows Salah to sort of drift in and out the game a little bit more and create chances for him. I mean, Salah was... I saw quite a few people saying he misfired yesterday. I didn't necessarily thought he misfired. I just thought he warmed up to it.
There was a guy who was sat by the press box who, all the way through the game, from almost the first minute to last, was on... I mean, obviously, Salah couldn't hear it because he was too far away.
Was that the one shouting
expletives? Yeah, he was just like on his back, all going, come on, you're lazy, do some work, come on, all this kind of... I'm like going... I was like shaking my head at him. And then, of course, he had a go at him after he set up the first goal. And then he continued to have a go after he'd scored the winner. And like, yeah, Salah didn't have his best game, but he still managed to have 12 shots, which is the most shots any Liverpool player has had in a Premier League game since he started. There's records. I don't know when that started, about 2008, something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, 12 shots by one player, by the way. Not just 12 shots by the team, it's 12 shots by one player. Gets the goal, as I say, sets up the other one. That was a good bit of persistence as well.
Very close to scoring a third.
Clearly scored another one. And he still managed to get in all these spaces, and yet you're judging him on the fact that some of his finishes were quite weak, and when he was shooting, he should have been passing, and when he was passing, he should have been shooting, really, if we're being honest, in the first half in particular. But he still gets the goals, and as McAllister said after the game, he said, you know, look at Mo's mentality. He had all those chances, and yet he's still there, and that's why, if you mention about Diaz not going off, that's why Salah doesn't go off either, and which is why he's going to be... obvious, isn't it? He's the top scorer. He'll be massively important over the last few weeks. So, yeah, going back to Diaz, I think one thing he's very good at that Salah probably doesn't do anymore is just getting Liverpool upfield by just running with it.
Yeah.
You know, and that obviously changes a bit, because Salah's not like Cristiano Ronaldo in the sense that he's changed himself completely, but he has changed, had to change his game. Yeah. Slightly, he's been playing for Liverpool for 6 seasons now. Is it 6? Yeah, it's 7 seasons. Yeah, 7 seasons. He's not going to be the same player as he was when he first joined.
Yeah.
Not least because all the players around him are different. Look at how many goals he sets up for Nunes, for example, and vice versa. So,
and he should have set one up for Diaz. That was one of the strangest offsides, because I was convinced.
I was convinced it was offside as well when I saw the replay.
And even I haven't really seen replays or pictures since, but I still couldn't really get my head around how it got ruled out. But it was a great pass from Salah. He doesn't get the credit for that, Salah. He does several of those passes a season.
He's got loads of assists.
I know he's got loads of assists, but several of those, like, defence splitting. If De Bruyne plays that pass, we're all like, wow, you know, his vision. But Salah does that fairly often, I think. It seems to see him play those types of passes.
It's not like people think Salah's rubbish, though.
No. But it's not. I still think if you asked 10 pundits whether he's selfish or not. You probably still get five or six of them and say, yeah, he's very selfish.
I remember that one year where Kane was...
He is when he has to be.
Yeah. That one year where Kane was getting all those assists and everyone was waxing lyrical about his passing, and then it sort of went away and balanced out a bit. Whereas Salah won the Playmaker Award, didn't he, 2 years ago? And he's on for it again this year. I think this he didn't officially get the assist, so he's only going to be one off it. But then he's going for the Golden Boot as well. But because he's got that eye for a pass now and he is getting these figures, both in goals and assists, he doesn't need to run with it because ball moves faster than the man. You can just do that defence split and pass. You can spread it to Diaz on the other flank or you've got Trent there. He's just become more of a team player and he picks his moments. Granted, it wasn't his best game yesterday, but that's because it was only his, second Premier League start at Anfield in 2024. He's missed a chunk of football because of injury, the internationals as well. And while you can see why they wanted him to miss the international break, there's also an argument of if he'd gone away, maybe he'd been a bit fresher because he's got the rhythm of playing games. Mm-hmm. But if he's still missing chances, not 100% at it, and he gets the winner, he keeps that cool head in that right moment, or he picks the right pass at the right moment. Like if the offside flag's not there, you're going, what a great game Salah's had here. He's involved in all three goals. And I think with the suggested new offside rules, isn't it, that would count because then you're giving the advantage back to the attacker more. He's just so good. You run out of things to say about him because he's just been doing it for an insane level of years now and we're not seeing a drop-off. There's a reason why he's got the goal and assist clauses in his contract and there's a reason why he gets the money because he still justifies it. He still does it on the pitch.
At half-time, I was looking at the game thinking, you know, Liverpool got their equaliser. They've been persistent. And I never really doubted that they would get a second goal. And yeah, with Brighton, I always think that they might come back into the game. But I always thought Liverpool would get another goal. I always thought it would be Salah because you just know that he's often the man who finds himself in the right spaces because of how good he is. Going back to squad players, I tweeted Neil Docking back after the game because he said, Neil Docking was our former court reporter.
And now he's an Anfield Rap representative.
He goes on the Anfield Rap a lot. He's
your counterpart, isn't he, with the Nationals?
Well, yeah, he's one of them. He works for the Daily Star on Sport. Big Liverpool fan, lovely guy. Hi, Neil. And he's tweeting yesterday saying that, you know, Liverpool potentially haven't got enough credit for how well they've done with a lot of squad players. And funny enough, I think he's right, but I think like Liverpool squad players, I don't necessarily think you look at them anymore and label them squad players because they're all playing so well that you're happy for all of them to start. You know, Conor Bradley, you don't bat an eyelid when he starts a game. And I think when Trent comes back, there will be an interesting battle between two of them to see who gets in at right back. Gerald Quanta, well, you've got some good stats around him, Doyle, but again, don't bat an eyelid when he starts a game. Kelleher, obviously Alisson will get back in when he comes back, but I mean...
Not for the Europa League games, in my view.
Maybe not for the Europa League games, but Kelleher's been so good that if Alisson left the club tomorrow, I wouldn't want them to buy another goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Because you just keep Kelleher.
And then your favourite goalkeeper can be deserved number two.
Adrian, yeah. Give him a 10-year contract. And then, I just think anyone this season who's come into the squad has been massively influential. And
even
really...
Tsimikas with that run he had, like he's been overlooked because of Gomez. But when he was starting games, he was doing really well as well.
All right, well, Gomez is probably the biggest example, isn't he, all season. Wherever he's played, he's been really good. He's pushed for a run of games. His performance levels haven't dropped. The team hasn't felt like it's suffered because he's had to come in. And you can apply that across the board to so many different players. And it's kind of been what's underpinned Liverpool's title challenge, really, this season, hasn't it?
Without it. Simple as that. It's not like it was by design. It's purely been by accident. And also the fact that they've had two. But what hasn't been by accident is the fact that the academy players have been ready to come in because that's what the academy's been there for years and that's why they moved on to the same site at Kirby and that's why the first team has been regularly joined by youngsters training and we've said many times before they know exactly what they need to do. Whether they're good enough or not is entirely down to them. But they're showing now that almost all of them that have come in have been able to do a job and just go quickly back onto Quanta. I reckon we've got to the point now where I almost think that Quanta is ahead of Konate on merit, because why wouldn't he be? Played very well against Manchester City. He started the last five games. It was interesting that...
Did he start the last five league games?
No, just the last five games. And it's just interesting, I think, that he started that game And it'll be interesting to see who starts at Old Trafford, because I do think Canati will come in against Sheffield United and go down to the team in a bit, just do rotation. But Canati knows that he's got a bit of a fight on for his place. And just very quickly, I think that the game against Brighton, I thought we often in the past have seen that, you know, Klopp likes his progressive defenders or defending on the front foot.
Mm-hmm.
At least one of them. It used to be Lovren next to Van Dijk. Yeah. It used to be Gomez. Used to be, to a lesser extent, Matip. Certainly it's been Canati. But I actually think it was Van Dijk himself. Against Brighton, I think it was more Quanta who was the one who was more likely to sit back and then take the ball into midfield.
The moment I loved from Quanta yesterday was when there was that Brighton ball over the top, and was it Adringer who was up against. And he's like, Adringer's got this, he's got the pace, and he just somehow bursts past them, then beats him with the Cruyff turn, despite the fact that he has him all over his back. He's just got everything, doesn't he? You need to be a top centre back, and the fact that he's still so young. We were in this media thing with him last week when he was away with the 21s. And one of the nationals asked him, do you know if you've got enough games to get your Premier League winners medal? So, don't care. I know I've played my part. But then you think, you only need five. He's smashed that completely.
I think he's had 27 appearances this season.
I think this one was his 26th of the season overall. Yeah. But if you only need five for a Premier League medal, that means pretty much all the kids who have played a decent role have got one at this point.
Yeah.
Like Doak, who hasn't been seen for a few months because of injury, can't be far off. Clark's probably got one. McConnell's probably got one.
Liverpool have got to do something first for them.
Yeah, that's what
I didn't want to do that.
Yeah. No, but I do think with Quanta, there's no areas. Let's go back to when Nat Phillips came in, and I thought Nat Phillips coped admirably in the season where Liverpool lost every centre back, and he came in. And you always thought, well, Phillips, he won't let you down the air, and he can tackle, and he's quite good at intercepting the ball. You know, the basics of a centre-half, but the things that then elevate a centre-half into a really classy player is their passing, their positioning, their calmness under pressure, the things that make Van Dijk an absolute world beater. And all those areas that we've seen Quanta tested, does he let his head drop or a mistake get to him? I've not seen that happen yet.
He's got the Matip dribble in his locker as
well. Yeah, his passing, I've always been impressed by his passing. And I thought him, and this goes for Bradley as well yesterday, I thought early on, well, actually throughout the game, Brighton targeted that side of Liverpool's defence. They tried to clip a lot of balls over the top. They tried to get Adingra running at them. They tried to exploit a bit of space. And it did come off, especially early on in the game, a little bit. But you know, you're not going to get 100% of your interceptions, tackles, all those sorts of things right all the time. But what is really great about Quanta and Bradley is you never see it get to them. You never see them completely fall apart and have a shocker. You never see them dragged off the pitch or have to be subbed off by the manager. Instead, Brighton get a bit of success, but they grow into the game. They still receive the ball. They still make the tackles. They still get across. They don't start messing up clearances or trying to rush things. And Quanta especially just seemed really, really calm. And I think that could take him a long way. It does seem a bit of a mini Van Dijk, doesn't he, in the way that he plays.
He said it.
His style of play.
Where Quanta and Phillips both score very highly is their attitude. They are a bit unflustered and they've just got the right mentality, which again is something that's been ingrained in the academy.
Well, Liverpool have worked on that academy for such a long time. And you know, again, I think we spoke about this in the pod before. I remember when I was young, obviously they brought Gerrard and Carragher through, but after that there was a bit of a dry spell for academy players, and then there was sort of all the debates and the infighting over who ran the academy, and there was all different types of people. Frank McParland
felt like it got overhauled at least two or three times. Yeah.
There was the Dutch fella, do you remember him? Piet Hamberg, for like 1 year. There's all these random people that were brought in and left, and since Liverpool brought Inglethorpe in, what's great is they just seem to have left it alone to let it work. And like you say, they all play the same style. It seems a very joined up club and joined up approach. It's another reason why, with the manager leaving, there's groundwork for success. It's what Man United.
I'm sensing a segue into new manager chat now.
well, we do need to do it. We'll come to that in a bit. I think I want to talk title race. But before we do all that, one thing that I want to introduce on Mondays. Is, again, we keep talking about them, but our friends at NordVPN, the NordVPN person of the week. So I was thinking of player of the week, but let's extend it to person, because there are all different people at Liverpool and beyond doing great things. And sometimes we might want to talk about the manager. So obviously we haven't had as many games this week to talk about. So I want you to nominate someone.
I'm just going to put McAllister up there.
Yeah, I was going to say McAllister.
Do I need to
verify? Well, expand, yeah.
Had a great game against his former club. A really classy gesture at the end, going to salute the Brighton fans. Sets up the winning goal and scored for Argentina in midweek as well, didn't he? So it's been a great time for him, for club and country.
Yeah, and would you say...
It's either McAllister or me, because I've worked every bank holiday this week.
So have I.
Again, me.
No. Well, maybe McAllister gets time and a half.
Has he filled it in by the end of the day? He'll get it in his April pay.
Well, there you go. Our inaugural NordVPN purse of the week is Ian Doyle. Congratulations, Ian.
Thank you very much.
It is Alexis McAllister. We'll do that every Monday. And when we're live on YouTube, I want people to get involved. So when we are back and you can see us in person, Ian's wearing a nice light blue and grey top. Theo looks like he's got some paint splashes on his top.
You've done a bit of home decorating. Like a dark grey kind of effort, isn't it?
What you're saying, what we're wearing, are you going to describe the decor around us today?
Yeah, we're actually sitting in the... The studio is all decked out for the Royal Blue podcast. So behind us, we've got all sorts of Everton books, including Preno's book.
Program as well.
Some Everton United programs.
Super Blues. Yeah,
actually, look at that.
Oh,
Liverpool book sticking out. You can't see that. It's not very good for an audio-only podcast when I say look at
the
that.
The Mishiri is. That must be a horrid read for Everton fans. The unofficial Everton timeline of the Mishiri is.
Right, anyway, the title race. Man City and Arsenal played out.
Yes, they did.
Barnstorm.
Apparently it was an absolutely terrible game. I haven't seen any of it.
0-0 draw.
0-0 draw? Hello, guy. Are we flying America and stuff?
It was funny.
Zip all. Zip each. Sorry.
It was a funny one yesterday because I sort of, even though it's mathematically the best result for Liverpool, kind of came out of it slightly disappointed. I wanted one of them to lose because I want one of them to be knocked and sort of drift out the title
I would have agreed with you had there been five or four games to go, but there's still nine to go. Yeah. So I don't necessarily think that would have made any difference. So from that point of view, look at it as though they were playing other teams and they both drew.
That's a good point. Yeah,
I do think the one result Liverpool didn't want though was Arsenal winning. I think they'd have settled. They probably would have even settled for City winning, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think draw was the best result. So they can't really complain too much. Although I do think it now makes Arsenal, for me, clear favourites to win the league. And if they don't win it, they should probably disband.
Do you just say that every year now?
No, let's face it, last year they were in an even better position and messed it up. But I think this year they should have learned from that experience. They haven't got any game as hard as that one. And I do think they've got a reasonably easy-ish run in. The only game that they should worry about is Tottenham away. United away is next to last game of the season. By then, United won't be in the qualifying for the Champions League, and they'll be desperate for Manchester City or Liverpool not to win it.
But top you five say can that. Get into the Champions League, so surely United still be in
contention. I think Tottenham and Aston Villa will be clear with them.
But you say that, but I think you're right about United will want Liverpool and Man City not to win the league. But also, fans will take great delight in denying anyone. Because Arsenal are their second to last game of the season, they're not exactly going to go, yay, Arsenal, they don't have a great history with them.
I disagree. I know the way football fans work, and that's what I've been thinking.
Well, Tottenham play all three, don't they? And Tottenham, have they rearranged the cancelled, postponed one against Man City or not? They've got to play all three left, but Liverpool's the only one Spurs have got to do away from home, so surely by the same logic, Spurs will be desperate to make sure Arsenal mess up.
Well, no, because Tottenham are still going for a top five place, and they're in a much better position than Manchester United are, and it's a lot earlier than the Arsenal game.
I think the most important thing about the Manchester United game is Manchester United are not a very good football team, and if anyone plays Liverpool
that's them on Sunday.
Yeah,
then.
Well, we've discussed this.
We've had this before. Yeah. We've said this before. We don't have to do. It's not the Manchester United podcast. No. Let's talk about the
that's
title.
Friday.
That's the title race.
But that's the title. But Liverpool play United on Sunday, and if Liverpool play Man United like they were at any other, what are they? 10th, 8th, 9th,
7th
place team in the league, they go there and win quite comfortably. They just have to They're going to Old Trafford because they concede lots of shots. Liverpool create lots of chances, and the same for Arsenal. Really, if Arsenal go there and play anything like they've played all season, they'll win comfortably. But I think it's a really really tough race now. And I must admit, I wanted I wanted Man City to win because I kind of think Man City are inevitable anyway. I can't imagine them having a great drop off. Whereas I thought Arsenal, this could hurt them psychologically if they lost away at City, because it might have gone to them, well, you know what, you're still not good enough. Whereas I think Arsenal will take great confidence from getting a point there, shutting them out. City will be more frustrated.
Well, we can talk ourselves into saying any of the three results would have been good for Liverpool. If Arsenal had won, I've still reckon they bottle it at some point. I don't think they've got the experience to go all the way, and when they've still got the Champions League, that's a distraction. And then a four-point lead over City, you don't shrug at that. But then if City win, like you say, you dent Arsenal, you take them out of it completely, and then you've just got to have faith in Liverpool to end up with more points than the City at the end of the season. They'd have still been a point clear of them. But then 0-0, Arsenal's goal difference doesn't get any better. The goals for doesn't get any better. You've got advantages over both. You still just got to have faith in Liverpool to get the points, which is how they approached it in 1920 before it got ridiculous and they were like 50 points clear anyway.
No. But 2019-20. I was thinking 1920.
Everyone remembers that glorious season.
Even I wasn't born then.
Yeah, but that was basically the point. I didn't care.
I think Arsenal have got a bit of Liverpool 2018-19 about them now.
So they'll miss out.
Well, they might do, but they are convincing me as each week goes on that they're actually a really good team, and they're not, you know, they won't get worse next season. They're certainly not a flash in the pan. They've done it for 2 years now, and they have improved this year on last year. The bigger games they're performing well in, and I feel like they've got a bit more mental strength.
And I think they've beaten both Liverpool and City, and they're still not top.
I know, but that can happen. But I think
interestingly, it was said on Sky that of the last remaining games, the equivalent game last year, Arsenal won all of them apart from Man United away.
Did they?
Yes. Well, Liverpool's record is not so good against the ones they got left.
But are you writing that piece?
No.
You say that Liverpool were a very different team. One they are now. So with nine games to go, how do you both see it?
Arsenal, City, Liverpool.
It's just. Ian Doyle's glass of Carabao is never half full, is it? It's always half empty.
I'm just putting the pressure on Arsenal. Again, I've said this loads of times, no pressure on Liverpool. It's all on Arsenal City. It's more on Arsenal because they got a good result at City.
Are you going on another Arsenal podcast this year? Do they get you on each year now?
I'll tell you what, if they win it, they'll definitely get me on. I'm busy that life.
You should contact them and say that you'd like to come on. Nine games to go, Theo.
City are inevitable, so City, Liverpool, Arsenal.
Yeah, that's the way I probably lean.
Just had a go at me, and none of you think Liverpool are going
to
win it.
Look, I never like to sit here and go, yes, Liverpool are going to win it. Can they win it? Absolutely.
I thought City were going to win it until now. Arsenal got that draw.
Yeah, I still think City just seem to be able to. Of the three teams, the one I'd back to put together a win of.
Yeah,
nine straight wins is always City, because we've seen them do it so many times before, but. You know, if Liverpool get through the next week winning, if they win the next two, then
Liverpool
probably I'll sit on next Monday's pod.
If Liverpool win the next two and then they go and play Palace at home and they win that, then it's like, well, hang on, there's only six games left, but four of them will be away. And three of them will be away games in a week. And I said the other week that's the crucial week for me. Yeah. And I think it is kind of building up towards that.
And that's when you have players back from injury, so you can just rotate a little bit like they were earlier in the season. Where
I know there could be loads of players injured by then.
You've already finished one of them, haven't you?
This is Liverpool 2023-24, isn't it? So,
but they're not Newcastle, are they? Let's be honest. Come on.
I don't want to get too carried away because there's still so much football left to
then
play.
Don't say anything.
What I mean. That's why I'm not predicting Liverpool to win it at this point, because I don't want to tie those flags, put those flags on the mask and then get carried away and it all blows up in your face.
You can say if you think Liverpool are going to win it.
I don't, because it's too open at the moment. Like, you always just expect City to come back, do exactly what they need to do and just pip you by a point.
What I would say, City are not as good this year as they have been the last couple of years.
Yeah, they definitely seem more human this year, City, don't they? They seem to be able to throw in the odd draw. I don't necessarily think I see a lot of teams turn them over, but I can see them drawing a few games in the final.
Play a big part in it. True, so if they both get through and they've got to play each other, Arsenal and City, in that semi-final, like that's around the time where they've got, United, penultimate game of the season. Yeah. That's going to be an insane week, and you have to do it twice in 7 days. It could be 6 days, couldn't it, if it's the Wednesday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
You're right, it will be six,
That will be. Liverpool should want both of them to get through, as painful as it is to watch one of them go on to get to the final.
Get absolutely battered by both of them teams.
You want them both to get
eliminated? Oh, yeah, totally, yeah.
I would want
And then I would like Real Madrid to then disband as well, so...
I want them both.
You want a lot of teams to disband, don't you?
Yeah, I want them both to go.
No, I didn't say I wanted Arsenal to disband. I said that they should if they don't win.
No, there was another team who said should disband before we came on air earlier.
Did
they? To our Everton counterpart.
Which team was it?
Everton.
I didn't say that at all.
What did you say?
I didn't say that at all.
You said, are they on the verge of disbanding?
Hang on, yeah, that's a completely different thing. That's like saying that they're actually in financial trouble. You know what I mean?
I'm just saying you're disbanding a lot of teams today.
Roberto De Zerbi.
Misquoted me there.
Roberto De Zerbi.
Doesn't sound like me.
Get Joe Cole on the phone, see what he says.
Roberto De Zerbi had a little bit of an audition. What did you both make of it, Ian?
Wasn't paying any attention, to be honest.
No?
No, not really. I think it's just about the here and now. If you want to have a bit of an audition, you don't do it on one game against Liverpool.
No, I know what you're going to say. Didn't literally mean that.
I know, it's not but my point is, I wasn't really paying much attention to what Brighton were doing.
Yeah. I think Brighton play a very high-risk
I was more interested in what Jurgen Klopp had to say about it before the game, where he says, yeah, they do play a certain way, but they have very fixed positions.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a very set way of playing. But it's very difficult to get around it if they do it all properly. Yeah. And I think Liverpool learned a way of getting around it. So that's what I was more concentrating on Sunday.
But, yeah.
I got what I want, didn't I? A Liverpool win without them humiliating De Zerbi too much, just in case he does become the next manager. They were impressive enough. They were threatening. Liverpool were just better.
They were missing a lot of their best players, though, to be fair to them.
They do play a very high-risk game. I'm impressed. There aren't many teams that come to Anfield and really commit and play high-risk football like Brighton, and I think it's paid off for them in the last few years, hasn't it? Obviously 3-3, and was it 2-2 Anfield at one point?
It was a 2-2, yeah. Well, Liverpool 2-0 up.
Yeah, so that, you know, it's worked out well for them at times, but the one thing I've not loved about De Zerbi over the past few days is in both his pre- and post-match press conferences, him sort of going, oh, well, I don't need to sign a new contract. He's been more open to sort of hinting that he'd leave, and he seems to be a bit of a rabble-rouser in the way
that... Maybe he thinks he's going to Bayern Munich.
Maybe, but he seems to be a bit of a rabble-rouser in the way that he talks. You know, I don't think he necessarily... He's quite headstrong, isn't he?
Italian?
Yeah. And
hang on, is that cultural? Are we allowed to say that?
I don't know. He's definitely... You could say that, but then Carlo Ancelotti is as cool as they come.
Exactly,
isn't he?
Yeah.
He's Italian, so... But yeah, he's very headstrong, and I don't necessarily... Benitez used to do it a lot, didn't he, where he'd constantly challenge the board and the club and sometimes the fans. And at the time when Liverpool were like a bit of the club was falling apart, wasn't it, the seams, it endeared him to fans, but I don't necessarily think I'd want a manager constantly doing it now.
Supporters would have wanted it last season, though.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. Amarim seems to be now the favourite, and I've gone over the weekend. I've tried to read up as much as I could on Amarim. Now I'm all in. He's great, and I wanted him from the start. And I've decided that he is absolutely the best man for the job until he pulls out the running, and then I'll change my mind again. But seems to have it all together.
Good.
Are you got anything to say?
I don't know. It's the short answer.
Dooley doesn't care because the next Liverpool manager will be younger than him for the first time in history.
Is that true?
I don't know. I'm not a clue.
It probably
isn't. I haven't thought about it, to be honest.
Well, Rodgers is older than you, and he'll be the youngest one they've had, aren't he?
Is he? What about Klopp? Klopp's older than he is? Klopp's older
than you. Of course he is. 50, isn't he, Klopp?
Not far off. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this isn't the Ian Doyle age show.
Even though you've got the I'm person all of the week.
He plays a similar style to Liverpool, I think, and I think I didn't quite appreciate the challenge Sporting Lisbon have had in trying to overcome Benfica and Porto. And I think...
It's kind of like what Arteta's done with Arsenal, isn't it?
Yeah, and quite similar to, really, I mean, not to the same scale, but Klopp and Dortmund, you have to overcome a big team in Germany, don't you, if you want to win the title, and he's done that in Portugal. All right, it's not as a high-profile league, but they haven't won a league in 19 years, which I hadn't realised. He did it in absolute style. He's having another go this year, so he's, you know, they fell away, didn't they, last year a little bit, but he's shown that he can rebuild and go again this year. He obviously works with young players, budget constraints and stuff like that. So there is, you can see why Liverpool would be interested in him, because if you come to Liverpool, you've got to overcome Man City, you've got to overcome richer teams, and work with the younger players, and sometimes sell players and sometimes sell to buy. So I think he does tick a lot of boxes. And then, and playing a similar style means that they don't have to rip it all up, do they? They don't have to buy different players. They can sort of try and go again with a similar squad and maybe make tweaks, which I think is massive as well.
I'd say Liverpool's links with Portugal at the moment probably play a part too. Like, it's easy to be dismissive of the Portuguese league as not being one of the major four or five. And Liverpool, certainly when they play Benfica or Porto, just seem to batter them in the Champions League in recent years. But the Portuguese league is so good at producing these top players, moving them on and then replacing them. And if you go through the players that Amorim's had at Sporting, how many of them have been seen linked with Liverpool in the last few years? Like, we know Liverpool are watching a lot of the top teams in Portugal. They've signed players from Portugal. They've got all the contacts where they can go and get endorsements on, like, Jota, Nunes, Diaz. There's obviously a lot of eyes on that league, so they know their stuff when it comes to who's hot and who's not in Portugal.
Yeah, and if you read anything about the fans or journalists or anyone that's in, they seem to love him. They seem to rate him very, very highly. So, I'm all in on him. So there you go.
All in on Amorim.
All in on Amorim.
On board with Nord and all in
on board with Nord and all in with Amorim. Shall we pick some teams for Sheffield United, who we've barely talked about, but I think it's one of them. I think it just boils down this week to you can't give any points away in games like this.
No, you can't.
Win it, get a few goals, don't get any injuries.
And annoy Chris Wilder.
Annoy Chris Wilder, yeah.
It's never his fault.
It's not. It's not.
Although you can tell him that.
The last minute where Liverpool are 10-0 up, Klopp's eating a sandwich, talking to Chris Wilder.
He will have his players proper worked up for this one, so I think it's the first half will be interesting.
Yeah, all right.
That'll be like when Luton are going to win at Anfield.
Yeah. Kelleher.
Kelleher.
I think there'll be changes. I think Kone will play.
Yeah.
I think Van Dijk will play. I think Robertson, if he's back, will play.
Yeah.
And I think Gomez will play right back.
Okay, all right. I wouldn't be against that. Yeah.
Same, but then if Robertson is not back, Bradley keeps his place.
Exactly,
and the left back.
So, okay, I agree
midfield,
with that. Midfield
will be Endo, McAllister and Elliot.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. McAllister, playing a lot of football, isn't he? That's the only, I know he's been very, very good. Do you give him a rest? Maybe play him for 60 minutes or so and try and bring him off.
Yeah,
I'd go with that same trio, I think. Like, it helps it's the Thursday kickoff. Mo will be cursing it at the end of the week. And you've got the lesser turnaround for United. For this side of the week, it's good.
Yeah, okay. Theo, stick with you for your front three.
That's unchanged again. Nunes, Diaz, Salah.
We'll tweak it. I'll play Gakpo down the middle, and bring Nunes out.
Yeah.
And you can always bring him on if you're desperate towards the end.
Give him a bit of a break. It'd be also nice just to let Gakpo start a game playing down the middle.
And hopefully try and give him some confidence.
Yeah. And with Gakpo, he says it's not his favourite position or his best position. He prefers playing on the left.
No, he doesn't. He plus playing down the middle.
But he said earlier this season he prefers the left. Since he stopped playing down the middle, he's come out and said that.
I was going to say, I prefer playing wherever I can play, says footballer.
I think as well, Liverpool need to target giving Diaz a bit of a rest if they can get him off a bit earlier in this one. So hopefully if they can get a couple of goals, they can bring him on, bring him off and maybe get Curtis Jones back in, move Elliot into the attack, something like that. Predictions?
Liverpool can see the goal, won't they? They always do. So 3-1 or 4-1?
Yeah, 4-1. Needs to get a few goals in this one. And while it seems everyone put six past them, Liverpool never seem to have it that easy.
I'd say 3-1. Sheffield United seem to drag Liverpool. They seem to be one of those teams, again, what I was saying before, styles make fights. Brighton always one of those teams that give Liverpool a really hard game. Sheffield United seems to be one of those teams that drag Liverpool down into a scrap. It's never a good watch against Sheffield United.
If Liverpool score really early, it could be a bit of a massacre.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. I always think they drag them down. So 3-1, I'm going to go for. And then, we'll come back on Friday to discuss that game, to look ahead to a huge trip to Old Trafford, to talk more about new managers and to talk more about the title race. Seems to be copy and paste for this podcast for
it does
the foreseeable.
And let's see who's put themselves forward for the Nord Person of the Week, an early contender for next Monday's award.
Yeah, let's hope so. Right, have a nice rest of the bank holiday and we will see you soon.
Not pressing the bell.
Thank you for reminding me. If you are, they can't press the bell because it's not on YouTube. But if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please give us a review. I've seen a few people doing that. It's really, really appreciated so we can continue doing this podcast as much as possible.
Would we stop doing it if they weren't reviewing us?
Well, Well, no, not necessarily.
In which case, stop doing it. No one doing it.
It certainly helps. So, you know, give us 5 stars if you like us that much. Give us 4 if you don't. Don't give us 1 or 2. Just don't review us. If you don't like us, don't review us. Don't say anything. Listen to a different podcast. But if you do like us, give us 5. Say something nice. Say hello. And we'll see you on Friday. Bye.